When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're planning on betting college football bowl games, good luck. No, seriously, it's never been harder. And you don't want to be hurting your bankroll. You want to make sure you're doing your homework. Listen to Cash the Ticket. Mike Valeni and I will be breaking down every single bowl game, dropping new episodes nearly every day throughout college football's postseason. Spicing things up with a 12-team playoff. Can't wait to see some of those teams from the South come up north for the snow. Be sure to subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. We are at Metropolitan Health Group at 4454 Transcontinental Drive. I just want to thank the many people that have come by and dropped bags of groceries off. We really appreciate it. It's for a great cause. It's for, the food bank, and they do such great work all the time, and we really appreciate everything that they do at Second Harvest, and we're very excited about this. And if you want to make a cash donation as well, you can just simply call Second Harvest Food Bank at 504-355-0025. And I know that that's the first call that Michael Heck's going to make when I get rid of him this afternoon. Michael, welcome to the show.
Thank you. No, well, look, you know, this is part of my past that is less well known, but I actually worked for a Second Harvest Food Bank in New York City, biggest food bank in America, for 2 years leading their corporate section. So I'm deeply familiar with and kind of an always part of the food bank sector. So, no, I'm already there. We volunteered. Our son Kai did a cooking program for Second Harvest, out there in Elmwood. It's a great organization, one of the better ones in the country, in my opinion. And it's not only great for people, it's great for the environment to make sure that we minimize food waste.
Absolutely. I couldn't have said it any better myself. Michael, I wanted to give an update on your pothole. Still smooth as a baby's rear. I drove by there the other night. It is happening, baby, there on Porter Street.
Well, thank you. You know, like, and I'm pleased about that. And I was saying to somebody that I think we need to put like a headstone, like, here lies Michael's personal pothole 2005 to 2024. But then somebody else said, you got to remember those potholes, they're like Michael from Friday the 13th. Like, they're going to come back. So, you know, I guess in Friday the 13th, you need to have a shovel ready to bang him on the head. I think here when you're shovel ready to put in more dirt. But,
absolutely.
That's not before a pothole.
So So let's start out. Let's get an update of where we stand. How many days now away from Super Bowl 59?
So we're 53 days away from kickoff, which means that we're under 50 days in terms of, you know, actual festivities started, because they start a week before. So we're basically in the red zone of this thing. And the good part, the exciting part is, you're beginning to actually see the results, whether it's Poydras Street being smooth as glass, or right near there, that mural, that the biggest mural he's ever done, that B. Mike is painting, that he's making incredibly quick progress on the Hill Garage overlooking Duncan Plaza. We're beginning to see the fruits of our efforts and our shuttle diplomacy beginning to blossom, to ripen. And that's really exciting, really gratifying. So we're going to see a lot of murals that are starting to go up. A gorgeous one's going to be on the Civil Courthouse on Poydras and Loyola. There's going to be a big mural going on the Girard Gateway towards the Superdome, the ferry terminal as well. A big Shep Ferry, he's the guy that did the Obama Hope poster, is going to be on the side of the Marriott entering into the French Quarter. So all that's going on. And then down in the French Quarter, they've started work. Charter Street is getting repaved. We're beginning to get the new lights put up. We've got the contract signed to get signage put up. We saw that there's an emergency garbage contract that was won by Sidney Torres, SD4 Waste. And that's exciting because to this day, people still talk about that lemony fresh smell they had from back when he had the contract last, back about 10 years ago. So, we're kind of into crunch time now, but it feels like so far things are coming together. And so I'm more than cautiously optimistic. No, I'm downright optimistic.
Michael, I got to tell you, last Wednesday evening, I was at Giana for the Feast of the Seven Fishes, which, by the way, one of the best meals I've ever had. And congratulations to their staff there. It was just absolutely incredible. But we walked up and they were tearing the street up, like three or four blocks of Girard Street. And within, I'm going to say under an hour, they had like four blocks stripped of Girard. And by the time we finished our meal, which was a feast, it truly was a feast, and came out, they had already had the sweepers out there removing all the debris and everything else. It was incredible.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned Giana. It's kind of, I think, of the Donald Link restaurants, the one that gets the least attention. I agree. I think it's absolutely delicious. By the way, went to the new Bon Temps Prime the other night. That was gorgeous as well, right up the street. But I agree. One of the fun things about seeing this construction work is, we're so used to seeing the construction work just stop and begin to revegetate and kind of become like its own biosystem. That when stuff happens like in normal time, it's like watching up like sped up photography of the evolution of the earth. It's amazing.
You gotta laugh to keep from crying.
but we gotta remember, like, anybody who has seen the city clean up after a parade knows that we have the capacity to do stuff as quickly and as well as anybody. And it's just a matter of applying that Mardi Gras parade will to the regular, maintenance of the streets. And it's happening now. We've got great contractors. I think people are feeling the pressure of the deadline, but in a positive way. And listen, another thing I want to mention, this is really important. Starting today, we're going to begin putting out a press release every Wednesday that's going to be an infrastructure update. It's going to go to all of our partners, all the press. It's going to include what's already been completed so we can take a victory lap. It's going to most importantly highlight what's happening this week so people can plan their schedules. And then it's going to talk about the future work. And it's also going to include an estimation of how long the work is going to last, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, so we can reinforce to people that, yes, it's true that the Super Bowl has been kind of the catalyzing factor, but these improvements that we're living through right now are going to benefit us for decades. We're cleaning up stuff that was done after the World's Fair 40 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. The way that you just articulated it, I guess you sense the excitement in my voice as to how quick they tore the street up and they were sweeping the debris and it was all done, and over the course of one meal. We're not used to that. What you guys have pulled together is going to continue after the Super Bowl, because I know you will admit that there's a lot of money still available that hadn't been spent from Katrina.
It's a really important point. So a couple of things there. One is everybody on our side, on the Jana Wing side, I've talked to Joe Thread, who's been doing a magnificent job for the city on his side, and the folks at DOTD and Sewer and Water Board. Everybody agrees the day after, we want to continue this rhythm of regular weekly meetings to then, use, let's say, Mardi Gras as the next goalpost, and then Jazz Fest, and then Essence, and continue to do the work around the city because it's benefiting everybody. Everybody's enjoying it. One of the questions I frequently get is, how much money is this costing you? How much new money? And I think it's really important for people to understand that with the exception of a small amount of money that Jimmy Harris was able to get from us from the state working with the administration and DOTD, the vast majority of the tens of millions that's being spent is existing budgets, existing money, existing grants. We're just now actually executing. And so that's always been the constraint. Has not been money, has not been capacity. It's been just the will to implement. And so it's we can continue this the day after the day after.
Yeah, absolutely. So as we get closer, are we experiencing more and more visits from the NFL, and what are you hearing?
Yeah, so the NFL is going to be basically with us full-time. That's really the effort that Jay Cicero at the Sports Foundation is really the master at. He's been doing this since the 90s. What I'm understanding from the NFL, from all sources, and the NFL itself, is that they're thrilled with the progress. They think that New Orleans is ahead of the curve in terms of cooperation, in terms of preparation. And you heard what Goodell said about the Superdome when he visited a few weeks ago. He said it was, quote, magnificent. And that bodes well not just for this Super Bowl, but really importantly for the next Super Bowl. Because when you talk to folks like Marcus Brown, who's running the Super Bowl committee, or the Saints, we want to do well now. But we know that the competition is only going to increase. They're going to be building a new stadium in Nashville next. And so we really have to use this event on the 9th and the week before, not just to show the world a New Orleans that shines, but frankly, it's the beginning of the process of getting the next Super Bowl, hopefully over the next decade. And so far, the fact that the NFL has been so pleased with what they've been seeing and hearing augurs well for that.
Absolutely. Michael, a couple of holiday headlines, as you point out, Capato, a Chicago-based technology company specializing in AI-powered business software, has made an announcement. Tell us about it.
Yeah, now, neither you nor I really know what AI-powered business software development at enterprise scale really means. It sounds like an NPR ad, but it's a great company. The founder of the company is from New Orleans. He's basically coming home. We're going to start out with about 20 jobs at a salary of about $80,000, so great jobs. Our intention is basically to move the entire company down here, and I think that we're going to do it. So we're seeing these massive announcements like the Meta one up in the Northwest. Then we're seeing these mid-sized ones like DAQA, DACA, and this one, Capato, that we just announced recently. And I think this, combined with everything that's happening on the industrial side, demonstrates a level of momentum in the economy that we haven't seen in a little while. So I find it very encouraging.
I had a chance, opportunity to visit with your former employee, Josh Flake, with LED now, Louisiana Economic Development, talking about the AI facility by Meta up in Richland Parish. That sounds absolutely incredible. Big spend, too.
It's big spend, but here's, I think, what's most important about it. I mean, the project itself is massive, $10 billion, 500 jobs. 500 jobs in the northwest of Louisiana is of generational importance. This is one of the most impoverished parts of the country, so it's really significant. But the bigger deal is this, and I don't want to speak ill of the past, but the reason why we don't have car manufacturing and all the benefits today, including EV manufacturing, frankly goes back to the 80s when other states and other governors were going and meeting Mr. Toyota or going to Germany to meet with BMW. We didn't do that. And as a result, we're one of the only southern states that was left out of the entire automotive wave and the tens of thousands of jobs we could have had because of that. So the fact that we're getting in at the front end of AI and that Governor Landry recognizes this and is embracing it is really, really significant at a generational economic level for Louisiana, because it means that we're actually getting in on the front end of this wave instead of watching others catch it and pass us by. So not to get kind of lyrical with this, but I think it's of transcendent importance.
Absolutely. Also, we have our little own Doge effort by Governor Landry as well, right?
Yeah, we got like Cajun Doge, right? Like, we got to figure out the... But
Jamba Doge.
Yeah, Jambalaya Doge, or I don't know, Dober's Doge, or I don't know. Okay. So
enough of that.
It's interesting. Yeah, when you talk to people about the Trump administration, the one thing that pretty much everybody seems to agree on, regardless of political stripes, is that it's exciting and interesting to have folks looking at making the federal government more efficient. You know, you and I and many others have worked in government, have worked with the federal government. There's just no question that this is a beast that needs to be put on a diet in terms of its numbers, in terms of its spend, because we're hemorrhaging money as a country, and that's going to be a problem over time, but also in terms of efficiency and speed. And that's not just for oil and gas projects, that's for green projects as well. Here in Louisiana, it just naturally is the same thing. I've worked at the state of Louisiana. There are thousands of really well-meaning, smart people who love the state working there. But yeah, same thing. We can trim down, we can become more efficient, we can upgrade our technology. And so, frankly, I think that every government should be doing this. I think it should be happening in all of our parishes and cities as well. Because just like with your business, if you're not continually trying to figure out how you can get more with less, you're going to get beat by the competition. And in this age of constrained resources, particularly for the state, we need to do it. So, I don't know exactly the form it's going to take yet, but the idea of a down-home Doge, I love it.
Yeah, I mean, it's always important to look at oneself critically in the mirror, right? And whether or not you re-engineer, you right-size, whatever term you want to throw at it, it's worth the effort to look at oneself.
It is. And, if you're not doing that, then you're not being a good caretaker of the public dollar, which is your constitutional obligation. The fact that when we get, for example, a contract signed out of government, any level of government, city, state, federal, that we tend to send one of those, like, you know, dancing emojis. It shouldn't be like that. The signed contract should be accompanied with a thank you, not with I just won the lottery. And so I think we're going to see for the entire country this focus on governmental and public efficiency, I think is timely, and it's going to be useful for all of us, for all ordinary citizens.
Absolutely. Michael, this was released the other day. I was like, you're kidding me. Venture Global Quick Ignition, they started production. I mean, it was like, what? It's already? And, of course, immediately, yeah. The Biden... Thank you so much for dropping the... we had someone just dropping groceries off here for Second Harvest. It's great. But it was like the Biden administration, Jennifer Granholm, they issue a report saying, oh, none of this is good. Exportation of LNG is bad, 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 and we're going to end up paying more for our own gas here locally as a result of the exportation of LNG. I don't really think they understand what they're talking about.
Well, either they don't understand what they're talking about or they're lying, and I don't know which is worse. I was at a luncheon yesterday with Jamie Dimon, who tracks his stuff carefully, and he had just toured the Venture Global facility. And what he was talking about is not just the marvel of the facility and the speed with which a $20 billion facility was built. And by the way, Newell, I just want to take a victory lap. I got my personal pothole filled before they got that factory.
Before they got that.
Okay, so take that, Venture Global. Right? How's that for efficiency?
Pays to know people in high places.
It pays to know low people in high places, Venture Global. But the thing is that what our natural gas that's coming out of Louisiana, which is now exporting over 60% of the country's natural gas, we're not only creating billions of investment and thousands of great-paying jobs locally, we are creating geopolitical stability in Europe, because now Europe is able to get domestic American gas instead of buying it from the Russian war machine. And then for the environmental people, It's absolute insanity because they know, or they should know, that if places like China and other places in Asia are not getting American natural gas, they are going to burn coal, including, by the way, American coal that we export right down the river. And whatever you think about natural gas, there is zero question that natural gas is less harmful for the environment than burning dirty coal. So I don't get the science, I don't get the politics, I don't get the rhetoric of attacking LNG. I think it's a losing proposition all the way around, and I wish they would just tamp it down for everybody's sake, including their own, frankly.
Well, and interestingly, let's just carry this to the next level. I praise the New Orleans City Council's Utility Committee for unanimously approving the Entergy request to sell their gas utility operations. And they show up there trying to make a big climate change argument over how this is bad.
I mean, well, like... the best part is, I'm not going to call any of that by name, but somebody testified to the council that they should reject this contract and they should convert the entire city of New Orleans from gas and nuclear to electrical. And I'm watching this and I'm saying, where does the electricity come from? Does this guy have a corral of unicorns and he's making electricity out of unicorn? Can I say fart on the radio?
Yeah.
Like, where does the electricity come from? It comes from gas or nuclear. So I think that the environmental movement is not served by people who go to the extreme and make statements that are easily disprovable or that don't consider a balanced approach. Everybody wants to protect the environment. Everybody wants clean drinking water. Everybody also wants to have heat available in the wintertime and wants to avoid being dependent on despots. There is a middle way, and I think that Louisiana, with this all-of-the-above cleaner energy future, you know, there's a big article and paper today about offshore wind off of Louisiana. We can do all of this, and we can do it in a smart way. And I commend the council for making this approval because this is all part of that story.
Obviously, you're not in the know because that electricity comes from the cloud, doesn't it? I mean...
Exactly. I mean, it's just, you know, it's like this. You remember that meme of the Tesla owner in California who was charging his Tesla with a gas-powered generator?
Yeah. I'm telling you, like, that's happening.
Okay. It's happening, brother. Like, look, I have no problem with EVs. I like them. I think that hybrids are going to be a part of our future. But the reality is that unless you have solar panels on your roof of your home, and you're using the sun to charge your EV, you're still using fossil fuels. Like,
yes.
This is just like, you know, you can throw a pile on a tarp of logs. I still know there's wood underneath there, right? You can't hide.
All right, we got to get to a break. We're visiting with Michael Heck, President and CEO of GNO Inc. We will be right back, folks. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We're visiting with Michael Heck, President and CEO of GNO Inc., and he has no shame. Michael, you want to introduce us to our guest?
Well, Newell, you know, we've been talking about technology a lot today. And in technology, there's a term they use for the first version of the product called the minimum viable product. And folks know you should never buy the minimum viable product, never buy the first iteration of anything. That's pretty much what I am. I'm happy to introduce my brother, who's the second iteration, and he's vastly improved in every way. And so I'm glad to introduce him to show what my folks could have gotten if they had just waited to the second time round.
So, folks, let me just simplify what he just said. This is the smarter of the two brothers, of the two Heck brothers. So that's what all that
means. Smarter, better looking, more trustworthy, all the usual things. He's also an outstanding architect and developer, and I think that's what he's here to talk about today.
Absolutely. And Michael, I know that you got a meeting to get to, so we'll let you roll, and we appreciate you joining us today. And Merry Christmas, because our next scheduled meeting with you is on... Are you able to stay, Michael, or you got to go? I thought they told me you had to leave.
No, my meeting got moved to after lunch. So I'm just going to I'm just going, what are they listening? Okay. I'm going to put it on mute and listen. So I'll chime in if needed.
Yeah, bet on that, David, right? Well, David, welcome to the show nonetheless.
Well, thank you very much, Noel. It's a pleasure to be here. And the way that was going, I was just going to sit back quietly and let you and Michael talk about how wonderful I am. This is fantastic.
I mean, oh, man.
After all that talk about a corral of unicorns, I mean, it's a pretty high bar that I've got to exceed today.
Not
another
really.
Day, David. Another day on the dual bar as well.
So, David, you've been busy. You're the founder of Formwork Development, and you worked on a project that I actually was I don't know how I got access to it. I was looking at the website of which y'all created with the old schoolhouse in Gretna. Tell us about that project.
Sure. I'll be thrilled to, and thanks so much for asking. We've recently completed the rehabilitation and renovation of the Gretna Primary School in downtown Gretna. And I think there are really two things to talk about with the project. One is the building itself and what we've done with it. And then the second is the structure behind the building, behind the structure that made the project possible. So I'll start with the building, and then we can talk a little bit about how it all came to be. The Gretna Primary School was built in 1911 as the first elementary school in Gretna, and served that purpose up until about the Second World War, where then it had a really interesting turn of history, and it was a welding school and actually trained female welders during the Second World War. After that period, it served as offices for Jefferson Parish School Board, and then they vacated the building in the 1970s. Sometime after that, the German-American Cultural Center occupied the ground floor of the building where they remain today, but the majority of the building, the second and third floor, had been vacant for about 50 years. So this has been a parish-owned building that the parish was maintaining and taking care of, but really had no viable economic use for years and years. And it's located in a phenomenal location on Huey P. Long Avenue in downtown Gretna, really in the prime corridor of the historic downtown. So when we started working on the project, we identified a shared office or co-working as a viable use for the project. And kind of putting that concept together really enabled us to redevelop the building. So today, the second and third floors contain primary workspace, which we named after the primary school. And that's about 13,000 square feet of shared office space. We have 20 private offices that can fit small companies of between 2 and 8 people, about another 12 kind of dedicated private workstations, and then seats for another 50 or so co-working members. So at full capacity, we'll have between 100 and 150 people in the building. And one of the great things about the co-working model is that we take care of all of the brain damage, all the back end of running an office. So we provide conference rooms, Wi-Fi, printing, mail services. We have a community manager on staff. And so the members of primary workspace really can focus on their core business and don't need to worry about the logistics of running an office. And, I kind of like the phrase that it allows you to focus on making your beer taste better. You can do the things that you do well and let somebody else deal with all of the rest. So that's sort of what we've done from a use standpoint with the building. As I mentioned, the German-American Cultural Center, which has been a cultural anchor in downtown Gretna, remains on the ground floor. We've consolidated their operations on half of the ground floor, and then we have a commercial retail space available on the other side of the ground floor, and we are working with some prospective food and beverage or kind of neighborhood market tenants to occupy that space, which we think would be a great amenity.
So this is a project that just recently finished?
That's correct. Yeah, I'm actually sitting here now in one of our private offices, looking out the window at Gretna, and I'm one of the only people working here today because we officially we're officially opening our doors on January 6th, I guess, beginning of next year. But we are finished and finished enough for me to be here and have Wi-Fi, and we have a soft opening phase now.
So let's talk about, you said that part two of the conversation is about the structure. How did this come to be?
This project's a public-private partnership between Formwork Development, between my firm and the team we put together on the private side, and Jefferson Parish and Jefferson Facilities, Inc., which is a economic development corporation, a public economic development corporation, and the city of Gretna as well, and Mayor Belinda Constant have been big boosters of the project. But the the building is owned by Jefferson Parish, and they were not on their own able to put the building back into commerce. So it was really a kind of drag, a financial drag on the parish from a very direct sense in having to maintain the building, but also a drag on the community in that the building was empty. So they had an asset, but they couldn't put it back into service. We, on the private side of the partnership, had the concept, the experience, and the expertise to put the building back into use. And it's a project that, and a building that probably wouldn't have been developed as a fully private project. A co-working space, for example, is very difficult to finance in the private market, but is a great, great economic development tool. So together, the public and private were able to enhance one another's strengths and offset each other's weaknesses. And by working together, we were able to create a viable project and bring this building back to life.
So recently, there's been a lot of controversy about the utilization of this type of structure. There's a similar type of structure developing a project, I guess, just down the block from you guys, right?
That's correct. And I think what the really interesting opportunity here is to think about this as an economic development opportunity. And I think about the economic development benefits here. And I think there's a real public benefit to economic development. And I'll continue to step on Michael's shoes as I talk about that. But there's three parts, and talking in bullet points like Michael is something I like to do when he's around. There's three parts to that. There's three parts to that. One,
you have to. I understand. You have to keep it simple. I got it.
minimal viable product, right?
Exactly.
Make it understandable.
Okay, we're waiting. Attention span. There's a squirrel.
All right, let's go. So the first one is at the building level. This building is no longer a drag on the parish coffers, right? It's going to be self-sustaining. Right. The revenue generated from the co-working space is not only going to pay for the maintenance and operations of the building, but it's also going to generate a surplus that the parish can then reinvest in the community. Secondarily, we're going to host 100 to 150 people who are going to be working in this community every day, supporting entrepreneurs, supporting small businesses, supporting startups, and generating, helping those businesses grow. And then the third is the kind of spillover or the positive externalities that come from putting a building like this back into commerce. It's a boon for downtown Gretna. It's a boon for the West Bank and for Jefferson Parish. And it's going to cause spillover investment and secondary development in and around it in the community. So for all those reasons, we think this is an incredibly positive and incredibly smart use of parish resources. And I can talk a little bit more about that. This project was funded in two ways. One was from a discretionary allocation of ARPA funds that came to the parish. These are federal dollars that came to Jefferson Parish and were deployed to renovate this building. And it's a building that's owned by the parish, right? So it's an investment in a parish-owned asset. And then secondarily, through the public-private partnership, we're able to leverage state historic tax credits to fund approximately a third of the project. So a third of the project was essentially we're going to have rebated or refunded through the tax credit program.
Which all makes sense, right? Because you have a historic building. That designation comes with issues and problems of its own, right? And being able to redevelop it.
That's definitely true. And, you know, I think as a developer, and maybe this ties into my background and history as an architect, but I really love constraints and I love challenges in the project. And this, as an historic building, brings a lot of constraints, right? We had an existing envelope we had to work in. We had some, you know, some water damage, some other issues that we had to deal with. And then because we were funding this project with historic tax credits, there were certain aspects of the building, both on the exterior and the interior, that we had to maintain. They were historically significant. And in order to utilize the historic tax credit financing, we couldn't change those parts of the building. And I think we did a great job sort of, you know, what I always say to the team is, let's make lemonade. I think we did a great job turning those constraints into assets. And if you come to the building, you'll see the heart of the building is this incredible two-story, what we're calling the commons, but it was the former auditorium space of the building, of the school auditorium. And that was an historically significant space in the building. We had to maintain it. And so we have this plaster arch and proscenium stage that really gives us the ability to host events as well as use this as a co-working space. So we took that constraints that we couldn't change that space, and it's now the kind of heart and most exciting and most beautiful part of the primary workspace.
I saw pictures of it on the website, and it looks absolutely phenomenal. And I think it's a great idea, especially you know, not far from the courthouse there. A lot of opportunities to create synergy with that, for sure. Got to get to a break. We're visiting with Michael Heck and his smarter brother, David. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We are visiting with the Heck Clan, Michael, president and CEO of GNO Inc., and David, founder of Formwork Development. This was exciting, getting both of you on air at the same time.
It's been a lifelong dream of mine, Noel.
It's kind of like, I mean, I think the way that we're feeling now is like the feeling that people get when they get to the mountaintop, you know, they get to the top of K2 or Kilimanjaro, they're like, God, like, but what next? Like, you know, like, what's the next, you know? Speaking of that, I think this might just be peak Hex. I think this just might be, I think we now know how much is too much.
But
let me say one serious thing so that we don't all get in trouble. I think what David said is exactly right. Two things. One is, it's a great example of public-private partnership, which each is offsetting the weaknesses or the inherent constraints of the other. And second, this is basic economic development. You're taking an asset that, if not but for these investments, would be a drag on the economy, and now you're creating something that's going to be catalytic. And most of the models that value the benefit of these things don't do it sufficiently, because they don't capture the new businesses, the new visitors, the new residents that are going to happen ultimately as a result of this building being brought back into useful commerce. I think one thing we need now there is getting that ferry going on a regular basis, and we're going to make, you know, Gretna greatna.
Absolutely. No doubt about it. Gentlemen, both of y'all, I've got to get to another break, but I really appreciate y'all joining me today. And to both of y'all and your families, Merry Christmas and Happy New Year, and have a great holiday season.
Well, thank you, Neil. Same to you, and really appreciate you having me on the show. And next time at Primary Workspace, come on by and please check us out at our website, primaryworkspace.com.
David, you're not a DJ as well, are you? Is that...
Oh, no. The world can only handle so much.
Yes. You leave that to the lesser than brother. All right, folks. We'll be right back. We're done with the Heck Clan. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We are broadcasting live from the Metropolitan Health Group offices at 4454 Transcontinental, and they have partnered up with Second Harvest Food Bank. And in fact, we are joined by John Sillars, Chief Strategy Officer there. John, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
John, you guys have been around a long time. Y'all do great work. We're really proud to have this partnership with Metropolitan Health Group and you guys today. So thank you very much for coming on out.
Well, thank you. I mean, thank you for all of the generosity. I mean, I'm looking across and I see a bunch of groceries that have been donated by people just coming in, dropping them off. And, you know, what's going to happen with these groceries, we're going to come and we're going to sort them, and then we're going to push them out to hundreds of pantry partners that we have throughout our service area, which covers 23 parishes across South Louisiana.
And you guys, y'all are one of those organizations that just don't know how to say no, right? When people reach out and they need assistance, y'all get to work and
yes,
meeting the demand.
Yes. With our president and CEO, who you're going to visit with in about a half hour, the answer is always, yes, we can. And we figure it out. But we work through partnerships. We're not an organization that comes down and says, hey, this is the way you're going to address food insecurity in your parish. What
right.
we do is we try to work with different organizations who are already trying to do that and align with them and work through them and make them actually be even better. And so it really is a case of one plus one. One equals three. So
yeah, and in other words, collaboration. That's
collaboration. Collaboration is a word that just kind of bounces around.
Yeah,
the offices.
In some sectors, it's a nasty word, but not in this.
Absolutely
one.
Not. If you can't be collaborative, there is no place for you at Second Harvest.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, John, for joining us, folks. We will be right back after the top of the hour news break, and we'll visit with Congressman Troy Carter, as well as Natalie J. Rose, the president and CEO of Second Harvest Food Bank. We'll be right back. Stay with us.